9½ Things to Do with a Time Machine and Panic at the Disco. Written by The Mad Lurker and read by Greedy Dancer. Hello, Las Vegas! The man stumbled out through the door, arms already held aloft in a victory pose, awaiting the thunderous applause that was about to greet... The lone cricket who does contract work for these sorts of occasions chirped to emphasize the complete lack of cheering audience. The man opened his eyes. He was in a garage. "Hello," he said. "This isn't the 25th anniversary concert of Panic at the Disco, is it?" A pair of small 13-year-old boys blinked back at him in stunned disbelief. One of them dropped a drumstick. "Oh, I see, right," the man said. "I'll come back when you're a bit older, then, shall I?" He disappeared back into the large blue phone box that had just materialized out of nowhere in the corner of the garage and now dematerialized again, leaving the space bare. Spencer turned to Ryan with a puzzled frown. "You have any idea who that was?" he asked, perplexed. Ryan shrugged. "One of your grandma's friends?" Spencer considered this. He was wearing a bow tie. "That's pretty last century." Ryan shrugged again and picked out a chord. "I don't know. Bow ties are kind of cool." "You ever heard of that band he mentioned?" "What? Picnic at Desk O? They're not on MySpace." "Oh well. From the top?" "Yeah." Time passed. In some places. In others, it stood still, or went around in swirls and loops of the vortex, or got stuck in the flux inverter and made the temporal coordinates go all wobbly. Like most things in life, it all depends on where you're standing. This time, when the man stepped out of the box, he peeked out the door first and asked, "Excuse me, are you Panic at the Disco?" Yes, said Brandon, shifting nervously from one foot to the other and wishing the other guys had an old gun to raid the fridge at the same time. It was hard enough being the new guy without having to act as spokesperson for the group. "Brilliant!" The man beamed at Brendan, which just made him more nervous. "Knew I'd get it right sooner or later. Hang on, you're a bit small, aren't you? And weren't there more of you last time?" Said Brendan. "Never mind," the man said, and vanished into the blue box. When it disappeared a minute later with a whooshing sound, Brendan shook his head vigorously and decided that this was what happened when you stayed over and ate too much sugar at a friend's house. Maybe his parents had been onto something after all. Time passed. Mostly. Some of it got muddled up and tangled in the middle bits and started fraying around the edges. "I think I've got it worked out this time," announced the man in the tweed jacket as he stepped out of the venue dressing room. "One of you has been placed in a state of temporal flux by an unexpected divergence in the time-space-causality-probability-plausibility continuum, so you're just going to have to come with me so I can get you sorted. I'm the doctor, by the way." He ground to a halt, noticing for the first time that things were not quite as he had expected. "Oh, hello. Who are you? You don't look like Panic at the Disco." "Doctor who?" asked the large, bald man who was, now one came to look at him properly, regarding the doctor in a very unamused way indeed. "Exactly," said the doctor. "Nice to meet you, Mr.—"
"Just Zack," said Zack.
"Do you have a backstage pass, doctor?" The doctor flashed a piece of paper in an ID holder at him quickly. "I trust that is satisfactory." "That's a blank piece of paper," said Zack, not even bothering to look at it. "How did you—" the doctor asked, looking at the paper in consternation. "I guarantee you there is nothing you can come up with that hasn't been tried by hundreds of teenage girls who claim to be Brendan's secret girlfriend. Let me rephrase the question. Do you have a real backstage pass?" Zack asked. "Ah, now you see, that's an interesting question," the doctor said. "Because I do, but I'm afraid it's not for this century.
Would you accept one from 1987? That's pretty close to 2006 when you think about it.
No?
How about 2013? 2492?
No?
I see. I'll just be going then.
Time passed. Etc.
Good afternoon. I'm the doctor, said the doctor, and I'm here to save you from an imminent temporospatial event collapse and ensure that my reunion tour concert tickets don't become invalid. A row of four unimpressed musicians with identical emo hairstyles stared blankly back at him. The doctor did a quick head count and determined that he had a complete set.
Good.
Did Pete send you? Asked the one on the far left.
Aha! First album out, but new bassist, am I right? Said the doctor.
I never could tell you apart in this era. Which one are you? He pointed to one of the four at random.
John, said John.
And that's right.
Did Pete send you?
No.
Wait.
Yes.
Who's Pete? The doctor asked.
Oh, of course! Yes, Pete. Yes, he did.
How do you do? I'm the doctor, and I'm here to save your...
You said that bit already, said one of the not-Johns flatly, but the doctor wasn't paying any attention. He was peering very closely at the waistcoat of a different not-John, who fidgeted under the inspection.
Looks like... What is this? A bit of a Regency-influenced line, cabaret style? Oh dear, that's a definite sign of temporal dislocation if I ever saw one.
Tell me, small panic boy, he asked the not-John, have you spent any significant amounts of time in the 18th century?
I don't think so.
And my name is Brendan, Brendan said, backing away slowly.
Could you please stop molesting my waistcoat? Zack doesn't let the fans take my clothes off.
Ah, but I'm not a fan, the doctor said, then paused and corrected himself.
Well, no, I am a fan, but that's not why I'm here.
Well, no, that is why I'm here, but that isn't why I'm taking your clothes off.
One of you is in a state of extreme temporal flux, and it's affecting all of you, even...
He pulled something out of his pocket and pointed it at Brendan. Your costumes.
Now, John, he turned back to the one on the left, took more readings, and frowned.
Your sonic frequency is all wrong. Why is my sonic screwdriver telling me that you aren't John Walker?
He peered at him suspiciously.
Because I'm not John, I'm Ryan, said Ryan.
Well then why are you standing in John's place? The doctor demanded. How am I supposed to keep track of you if you all keep moving about like that?
I know, why don't you put yourself in alphabetical order? Brendan John Ryan Spencer.
He trailed off.
None of the boys were following his instructions.
On the bright side, this meant they were standing still, which might help to remember which was which.
Until they moved again.
I know, he said brightly. How would you feel about wearing name tags?
Are you sure Pete sent you? Asked maybe not John.
Yes, absolutely. Of course he did, said the doctor hastily.
Now, if you would all step in here.
Yes, I know, it looks like a big blue box, but it's much bigger on the inside.
Hang on, said maybe not John. We've seen this guy before.
Remember Ryan? Years ago, that weirdo who showed up at practice.
Yeah, said probably Ryan. There's something fishy about all this.
Listen, if you don't come with me now, said the doctor desperately, your band is going to break up inexplicably before you even finished out your contract with Decay Dance. Your entire second album will be scrapped. The Big Bad Wolf Tour will never happen. And this is the really important bit. The world will never know what the Pale Lavender album would have sounded like.
Another collective blank stare.
You know, like the Beatles' White Album,
the doctor added, two more blank looks.
It looks like I got here just in time. Don't tell me you haven't discovered the Beatles yet.
Ryan shrugged.
What's so great about the Beatles?
The doctor looked at him sadly.
Ryan Ross, I cannot believe you just said that.
Clearly I've arrived not a moment too soon this time. How would you all like to go see the greatest band of all time?
Well, the second greatest.
Well, the greatest, unless I can get you boys sorted out.
Front row tickets, backstage passes, the works.
Lennon's an old friend. Well, I say friend. Still owes me a favor and a scarf. Aren't you coming?
Aren't the Beatles kind of overrated? Brian asked skeptically.
Not a moment too soon, the doctor repeated, corralling the boys into the blue box.
It's bigger on the inside, Brian said dutifully once they were all inside.
Normally, said the doctor testily, people sound a lot more impressed when they say that. Awestruck, even. Why don't you sound impressed?
Ryan doesn't really do awe, said the one attached to Ryan's hip.
I think it's awesome, said another one, beaming at all the whirring, whizzing, spinning things on the console.
You, said the doctor, pointing to him. What was your name again?
Brendan, said Brendan patiently.
Brendan, you are my new favorite, the doctor announced. Can I convince you to wear a name tag so I remember which one you are?
Right, the rest of you hold on to your hats, scarves, gloves, and other miscellaneous accessory items, because this is going to be fabulous.
Time gave up and went to go have a lie down.
A busker sat on a sidewalk in Chicago, picking out strains of 60s music on a cracked and worn guitar. A few passers-by tossed coins into the open guitar case, on which he had propped his feet, probably to keep the snow from getting into his flip-flops.
"Can you play All You Need Is Love?" asked a man who stopped to fish out his wallet with one hand, while his girlfriend clung to the other. The musician scratched his wildly tangled beard contemplatively, then mumbled, "This one is dedicated to my cat Clover Dillon III, and it's called All You Need Is Love and Cat Food." He began to play a sad, poignant tune that detailed the story of the tragic day he didn't find the can opener in time. The couple watched in bemused disbelief until the chorus, and then walked off in a huff, leaving behind only one spectator to listen to the remaining verses of feline lament.
"Oh, John," said the solitary listener sadly. "John, John, 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 John. There is such a thing as doing too many Beatles tributes. I am so, so sorry."
Time passed. Just not always in the right direction.
"Aha! I've worked it out!" the doctor exclaimed, bursting out of the TARDIS and into... "Ah, bit too early this time," he said as a baby John burbled up at him from a crib. "Something a little wonky with the navigation. Probably shouldn't have eaten all those biscuits in the control room, crumbs in the keyboard, that sort of thing. I'll come back later. Much later."
Time wound back to watch some repeats of its favorite shows while the man in the bow tie played with the dial.
"It's all right, it's just me. Nobody panic," the doctor announced. "You see what I... because you're panic. Never mind."
The musicians of Panic at the Disco, who could no longer stir up the sheer exclamatory energy to merit the extra punctuation, greeted the doctor's appearance with wide-eyed, exceptionally, almost psychotropically so, astonishment.
"Ah, still a little too hung up on the hippie lifestyle, I see," said the doctor, picking his way through a carpet of flowers that he sincerely hoped had just been put down for the photoshoot.
"My fault," he confessed to his apathetic audience. "I should have realized. One influence wasn't enough. Couldn't be. Not for a truly nuanced musical style like yours was, should have been, will be again. What you need now, what we all need, is a return to the classics. Music you can dance to. Dancing, that's the ticket. I love a good dance, don't you?" He clapped his hands excitedly.
"Doctor?" said Brendan at last, incredulously. "Are you back, or am I just having another hallucination?"
"If you're hallucinating the dude with the big blue box," said John, "then I think we're having the same hallucination."
"Sweet," said Brendan, playing idly with some flowers and what appeared, on second glance, to be one of his bandmates' headbands.
"If you're weaving more flowers into my hair, Brandon," said Spencer, who was taking a nap on some tulips, "I'm going to have to murder you, and I really don't want to have to move right now."
Brandon hastily withdrew his fingers and transferred their activity to another head that was lying next to Spencer's. Brian swatted at him aimlessly, but made no further objection to being garlanded, so Brandon settled down happily to his task. The doctor sighed and took a seat to wait for the buzz to wear off. Maybe he could lure them back into the TARDIS with promises of food once the munchies set in.
"If you would care to leave a message after the tone, time will get back to you as soon as possible."
"So this is the 18th century?" Spencer asked doubtfully, peering through the cracks in the door that led into the ballroom. Music filtered back to him. Old music. Music that was nothing like they did. It was music you can dance to, maybe, but it didn't have much of a drum beat. He kept tugging on his red velvet jacket, which Ryan and the doctor swore looked right for the period, but their own choices of clothing weren't exactly reassuring at the moment. The doctor was still wearing the same tweed coat and bow tie he always did. Ryan was wearing... "I know Brandon said it would go with the flowers," said Spencer hesitantly, not wanting to offend anyone. "But are you sure that's what you want to wear?"
"I think he looks pretty," said John, patting Ryan's shoulder affectionately.
Brandon agreed eagerly, though that was probably just because he was proud of his work on Ryan's hairdo.
"You know how I feel about gender norms," Ryan told Spencer reprovingly, hitching up the front of his dress and peering down the front of it. "Though I think you may be right about the fit. It's a little off."
"That's because the person it was made for had boobs, Ryan." Spencer rolled his eyes. "You should have taken one with a smaller bust measurement." Ryan glared. "This one suited my coloring better. Does anyone have a sock or something?"
Brandon gallantly removed his and handed them to Ryan, who accepted them after a cursory sniff.
Spencer groaned. "This is such a bad idea."
"What are you talking about?" the doctor said. "This is the best bit. On the other side of that door is a world you can't even imagine. A world of romance and dancing and brilliant, sparkling wit. I hope one of you brought a lyrics notebook."
He looked hopefully at Ryan, then turned away in slight embarrassment as he noticed that Ryan was still busily engaged in stuffing his bosom.
"All right, ready to go?" he asked a minute later, when John had stopped patting Ryan's chest experimentally to see if anything was going to fall out. "Geronimo!"
They burst out into the ballroom, and the doctor grabbed Ryan's hand to swing him into the next movement of the dance. A few minutes later, they burst back through the door and ran pell-mell into the TARDIS. "I told you it was a bad idea," Spencer puffed as he collapsed on one of the console chairs. "They had swords."
"If you knew it was such a bad idea, then why did you punch the big one?" John asked mildly.
"He impugned Ryan's honor," Brandon piped up. "You can't expect Spencer to let something like that go unanswered." Ryan sulked the rest of the way home, and then went to revise some lyrics about how hard it was to fall in love when guys were such assholes. Time came back from holiday and found, much to its astonishment, that someone had tidied up about the place. Slightly. It was still a mess, but there was a small oasis of calm in the middle that smelled faintly of lavender.
"Hello?"
The voice paused, and a head poked out tentatively from the wings of the stage.
"Is this Las Vegas?" he asked a passing tech.
"Are you supposed to be back here?" the tech demanded, doing a double take at the head emerging from a big blue prop that no one had informed her about.
"Yes, I do believe I am," the head replied.
The body attached to it strolled out and locked the blue box thing.
"Can I see your pass, then?" the tech asked skeptically, already motioning discreetly to security.
It was amazing what some people would try to get backstage,
but she'd never seen someone actually smuggle an enormous fake prop in before. It didn't even match the set design. The big phone box on the stage was pink. Everyone knew that. "Absolutely, got it right here," announced the intruder happily, flashing an ID badge at her and the security guard who strolled over to join them. "I also have..." He rummaged in his jacket pockets and produced a crumpled bit of paper. "An autograph! Isn't that cool? I think it's cool." The tech shook her head and gave up. It wasn't her job to deal with weird fans. That was security's problem. She went to go check the connections on the soundboard. A little while later, she wandered back and found, much to her surprise, that the stranger from before was now surrounded by an excited group of the headliner band members, who seemed to be trying to drag the man bodily into the blue prop. "No, I really can't," he was saying, extraordinarily flustered. "Look, I really just came for the concert. I don't know if now's a good time. I mean, I can probably get you back in time, but do you want to risk missing your big entrance? Think of all the disappointed fans. Let me tell you, I remember this one fondly. I don't want to have to remember missing it instead. Can we at least have a chaperone?" His voice was drowned out as the blue box slammed shut with the guy and the band all inside it. Well, maybe it was part of the show. It would be nice if someone told the techs what the hell was going on with the staging, but no one thought of these things. Time... Oh no, not again! The end.